This episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Patreon. Creators, are you tired of being paid in clicks and likes? Patreon lets you build real, sustainable income through the direct support of your fans. The creative system is broken. If you're a creator, sign up on patreon.com now. That's patreon.com and start building the steady income stream you deserve. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including The Accidental Creative, of course, Die MD, Herding Tigers, and the new book, The Motivation Code. It's been a busy week. The Motivation Code launched on Tuesday of this week. It's now officially in the world. If you want to discover what drives you, what it is that really brings engagement, fulfillment, deep satisfaction in life and in work, what it is that is common among those moments of deep gratification and a sense of achievement in your life, and how can you bring more of that to what you do every day, especially right now. Listen, while we're working remotely, most of us are not in the office. We don't have at our disposal all of the trappings that sort of comprise the typical workplace to sort of motivate us and energize us. We're not around people. We're not in those sort of conversations. Right now, more than ever, we need to understand what it is that uniquely drives each of us. So check it out at themotivationcode.com or just buy it wherever books are sold and discover your motivation code. Well, on today's show, we have a good friend and also somebody that I deeply, deeply respect. His name is Harris III. He is going to talk to us about the importance of wonder in our creative process. And this is a word that we often don't use. You know, we talk about a lot of other things, curiosity, we talk about intuition, we talk about a lot of other sort of angles on this concept of wonder, but we never really use the word wonder. Today, we're going to talk about how to flip the wonder switch and how that will forever affect our creating and our work. Before we jump in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Patreon. So creators, are you tired of being paid in clicks and likes? Social media and streaming platforms help people find your work, but getting paid is an entirely different story. With Patreon, you can stop rolling the dice of ad revenue and per stream payouts and grow your creative career through the direct support of the people who care the most, your fans. Since Patreon is built for creators, not advertisers, you'll skip the middleman and develop a sustainable income source by offering a recurring membership to your fans. In turn, they'll get access to exclusive community, premium content, and the chance to become active participants in the work they love. Listen, the creative system is broken. We know this, right? So if you're a podcaster, if you're a video maker, a musician, a writer, an illustrator, or a creative person of any kind, sign up on patreon.com now. That's patreon.com and change the way your creativity is valued by building the steady income stream you deserve. Again, that's patreon.com. And we thank Patreon for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's so great to welcome back to the Accidental Creative Podcast, Harris III. Harris is the author of the new book called The Wonder Switch, The Difference Between Limiting Your Life and Living Your Dream. I love that subtitle, by the way. Well, I love the title and the subtitle. It's great. Harris, welcome back to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Todd, so good to be with you, man, as always.
So I know some folks probably heard our first interview, but for those who are uninitiated with Harris III, could you tell us a little about yourself, beginning with, why am I calling you Harris III?
Yeah, that's a weird name. I am the third person in my family with the same name. And Harris is actually my last name, but because there's so many people with the same name, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, so many, there are three of us. somewhere along the way, my childhood nicknames growing up on a farm got set aside for good reason. And a lot of my friends just started calling me Harris. So it kind of stuck, but didn't want to be a one name person like Brittany or Cher or anything like that. So somehow I ended up tagging on the third. So I am Harris III.
And I'm sorry that you just put in my head the image of you like dancing around on the stage with one of those like headset microphones. That just completely, that's going to throw off the entire conversation, I think.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So tell us a little about yourself, about what you do, about your work. What kind of things do you typically do when you're not writing books and releasing them?
Sure. Yeah. I started my career as an illusionist. So I've spent a little over 20 years traveling literally around the world, performing magic shows, had a chance to perform shows for a little over 2 million people. on five continents, over 40 countries. And along the way, we can talk as much as you want about how I had these epiphanies, but had an epiphany that I'm not really a magician, that I am a storyteller who happens to do magic tricks. And that foray into story led to curating a conference called Story. So now I lead a community and a conference called Story. And all these cool people started showing up, everything from creative directors from Apple to Disney Imagineers. And you've spoken at Story and been involved in multiple ways. And so that kind of blew up. And so now my work in storytelling has sort of intersected with my work in wonder based on my background as a magician. And so I'm very fascinated by that intersection between wonder and story and all the transformational power that can be found there.
Fantastic. All right, I want to talk about the word wonder. By the way, whenever you say illusion, I can't help but hear the Arrested Development. I do illusions, Michael, not tricks. I do illusions. Anyway. All right, let's talk about wonder. So wonder is a very specific word. You know, you hear a lot about curiosity. You hear a lot about intuition, these kinds of words. But wonder is a word you don't really hear very often. Why the word wonder?
Yeah, I think for a long time it's been considered sort of this woo-woo soft concept that doesn't have a place in business or a creative process, as much as it's just a feel good, yeah, I guess it'd be nice if I had it, sort of non-essential. But neuroscientists, thankfully, are finally getting around to studying awe and wonder and figuring out what it is. And, you know, those things, those terms, even awe and wonder, are often used as synonyms. They are similar, but they're slightly different. We can dig into that as well. But even you use the word curiosity. I think forever we've been obsessed with curiosity because there's been so much science to support how linked creativity and curiosity is and how linked curiosity is to so many other things. But what we're now discovering is that curiosity is simply wonder in action. So wonder is like a state. And if it's a noun, when that noun turns into an action, when it becomes a verb, it turns into curiosity. So if curiosity is wonder in action, and someone's sitting around going, well, I certainly value curiosity, I just need to know how to get more of it, we've got to rewind and go back to the foundation of awakening and finding yourself more regularly in a state of wonder.
So how did this concept of wonder, this idea, this notion of wonder become awakened in you? Because I think everybody listening right now is thinking, all right, that's something I could use right now. You know, I think we are all no in a doubt. Place where, I mean, we really feel like we are living in Groundhog Day right now, you know, sure. Like the movie Groundhog Day, where every day we wake up and it's pretty much the same. And I think everybody has this, you know, we all have kind of this wishful thought that things are just going to go back to normal. Oh, well, that's when it's going to happen. Okay. It's okay. Now it's going to be this, that's going to, you know, and, you know, I think that one of the casualties of this whole thing is that sense of wonder or that sense of possibility and hope and all of these words that are tied up with wonder. So how did that sense of wonder become awakened in you? And maybe how can we begin to tap into that as well?
Yeah. You know, well, in the book, the reason why I named it the Wonder Switch is I like the metaphor of a switch. And the reality is that switch is probably a dimmer switch because wonder has the ability to sort of fade up and down throughout our life and the experiences and the stories that we live. But the reason why I consider it a switch is because I think we're all born into this world. We come into this world wide-eyed, believing in magic. We're able to see that magic everywhere. And that sense of childlike wonder is wide awake. And then somewhere along the way, something crushes that wonder and that switch gets turned off. So for me, my wonder has been awake multiple times throughout my life, including my childhood. But then the bullies on my playground crushed my wonder. The wonder switch got turned off. And when I was 9 years old, I got a magic kit for Christmas from my grandmother. It's not at all what I asked for Christmas that year. Thought it was kind of dumb at first, but learned my first trick, performed it for my mom and dad. And as I now know and understand about the science of wonder is that it's contagious. So now looking back, it makes perfect sense. But at the time, when my parents lit up and were like, whoa, that was amazing. How did you do that? Their wonder reawakened wonder in me, flipped the switch back on and gave birth to possibility. It gave me permission to believe in the possibility of a new story. And that new story was a lot better than the old one that I was finding myself in. The narrative that I had adopted that was driving all of my thinking, my worldview, the narrative that I adopt that drives all human behavior, like everyone else, had some holes in it. It was broken. It had some lies and some untrue stories that have been shaped by the stories told to me by the world around me. But as a result, I wonder, which I define as the what gives us permission to believe and what we have yet to see. So it allows us to shift from thinking that seeing is believing and living this cynical lifestyle as if like, oh, I'll believe in that when I see it. Wonder, the presence of it, when we're in a state of wonder, it allows us to move from seeing as believing to understanding that believing is seeing, that what we believe has the power to change what we see. Not in a, you know, like the secret new age sort of attractional, right, I just believe in it hard enough, I'll manifest itself. But sometimes things exist, or possibilities, or creative solutions, or new stories, they exist. And sometimes they're waiting right in front of our eyes. We just don't give ourselves permission to step into the possibility of those new stories. We don't give ourselves permission to explore and find those creative solutions to our problems, simply because we don't believe in that potential. So all of a sudden, at nine, my wonder was reawakened. I believed that that permission to believe gave me permission to step into that new story, and it was reawakened again. And then it stayed awake until, you know, some abuse I experienced in my childhood. Wonder switch turned off. It came back on again in my mid-20s. Then I got cynical again. It's kind of off, on, off, on. But in the book, I developed this thing called the transformation map. And it's sort of split into two halves of the circle. And I think the more that we equip ourselves to respond to inciting incidents in our story, the more equipped we are to sort of come in contact with negative experiences in the world around us and keep those things from breaking our narrative, to keep those things from shaping lies and untrue stories that we tell ourselves, so that we can stay wise and spend more and more of our lives with the wonder switch turned on.
Yeah. You know, I love that you, first of all, that you discounted, I mean, that you very clearly qualified this as, this is not just, you know, wishful thinking. That's not what we're talking about here. There's a very real psychological underbedding of all of this, which is when you are looking for possibilities, when you believe that there could be a pattern present, you begin to see patterns. And sometimes that can be, okay, we are looking, we're layering our pattern onto reality and we're seeing things that aren't really there. That can certainly be one effect of it, but one very real effect of it, especially if we are pragmatists in how we approach this whole thing, right? Like you say, yeah, experience wonder and at the same time, and be looking for possibility, but also recognize that there's a sort of pragmatism to all of this as well. I've seen that people, when they begin to open their minds and to engage wonder, and sort of look for possibility, that there's a very real psychological principle that plays out, which is that we begin to connect dots that we previously could not have seen had we not been looking for those patterns.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like when I say believing is seeing, I mean, imagine someone that you care about standing in front of the mirror and you believe something true about that person that they don't. And so maybe they believe that their life doesn't matter, that they don't have what it takes, that they're fat or ugly or whatever their version of, you know, the pursuit of enough. And they're standing in front of the mirror looking at their reflection every single day. When I say believing is seeing, what I mean is that the lies that they have been tricked into believing about themselves is actually quite literally changing the reflection that they see in the mirror, which is why they see someone different than you see. So we can very easily get tricked into believing these things that taint our perception and misguide us. And so that psychology is there, like you're talking about, but this is also very physical and rooted in science, that the presence of awe, like to be in a positive awe state, to be in a state of wonder, according to a bunch of new studies out of UC Berkeley, they're showing that there are links between positive awe states and the physiology of our body, that being in an awe state or presence of wonder can decrease chronic inflammation, can increase cytokines in our body, can decrease stress, boost our immune systems. Can create empathy and a greater ability to connect with other people on an emotional level. This is like real stuff. It's not just, oh, if I had it, it would feel good. It's almost as if our physical bodies are wired for wonder. We've just lost it somewhere along the way.
All right, well, let's talk about some practical ways that we can begin to reawaken wonder in our lives. What are some things that we can begin to do to help us be in that state of wonder more consistently?
Oh man, we have a few hours, right?
And you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds. No.
Yeah, this is the challenge of explaining the concept of an entire book in a few minutes, right? I mean, in the book, I talk a lot about the difference between a limiting mindset and how to develop a wonder mindset. One of the key components of a wonder mindset is focusing on allowing wow to have more of a presence in our life instead of constantly being obsessed with how. There are naturally wired how people in the world. There are naturally wired wow people in the world. Small example, I'm a wow person. My wife is a how person. Neither one is better than the other. They have their different strengths. Without being married to a how person, as an entrepreneur, I would probably be bankrupt again in a ditch somewhere, right? But how people have a tendency to look at a big idea and be able to see all the ways that it won't work or all the potential pitfalls. So what happens is I've seen a lot of, you know, really great ideas and dreams be howed to death simply because people don't allow wonder to do its work in those early stages of the dreaming, planning, creative process. So if you're a wow person, and like I am, and you get an idea and you go to share it with someone, if they're a how person, they are immediately going to respond by saying, not, wow, that's amazing. That's a great idea. Let's work on that. Let's brainstorm it. Let's develop that idea and make it better. Instead, that idea will be met from a how person with, now, how is that going to work? How is that going to be possible? Right. And just the awareness of how we're naturally inclined, we can begin to pay attention to our language. And sort of in the book, I offer a lot of language, especially for teams, so that we can, if you're naturally a how person, you can respond to people and how, when they first share their ideas, with questions that are a little bit more open-ended, as opposed to, you know, defiant statements that claim there's no way this will ever work. And if you're listening to this and you're on a team, I just recommend hold some safe space in your company or organizational culture to let that brainstorming happen without how people present. And I always say invite the how people to meeting number two, because that's when you want to bring them all in instead of letting them crush everyone's wonder right off the bat. Bring them to meeting number two, let them poke holes in everything and identify all the ways that it might not work. So you can go back to wow.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is we need both, right? We need both mindsets in order to move forward. But I think often we skew toward the how mindset versus the wow mindset.
Yeah.
In our organizations, especially. One thing that you wrote about in the book that caught me off guard, I was really surprised and delighted by it actually, was there's a section called permission to be average. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Oh man. Yeah. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. It's, you know, I spent so much of my life being told I was special, and that, I think that's a lot of getting started in something as a kid. Like when you get a magic kit for Christmas at 9, you start taking it very seriously. You know, by the time I was 11, had gotten paid $25 to do my first magic show. By 15, I had sat down with my parents at my kitchen table and listened to them explain to me that I just made six figures that year performing magic, more money than they had ever made in 2 years combined. Right. And so I was surrounded by lots of voices like, oh, you're a really special kid. And I was surrounded by other kids my age who are like, oh, I'm not that special. What I learned later in life is that we are all born, we all have these natural gifts and talents, that need to be developed and have the opportunity to be developed. But when we convince ourselves or buy into the lie that we're not special, it's sort of gives us permission to make excuses about why other people are pursuing and chasing and living out their dreams and we're not. And so I am not special. I was born average, just like everyone else. And so I think when we embrace the truth that we all have, you know, similar talents to work with, they're just all different from each other, it gives you permission to accept that we're average without the pressure of feeling like, oh, well, you have to be one of the special few in order to succeed. Does that make sense?
Oh, it absolutely does. And I think that there's so much pressure. And I hear this, especially from people entering the workplace, right? Like they feel like we read the stories of unicorns. You know, we read the stories of the 23-year-old who started a tech company and became a billionaire by age 26 or whatever. And we think, well, if that's not me, then I'm not on the right path. Or, you know, we see our peers, especially younger people, see their peers maybe getting a little ahead of them and starting to have careers and families and buy houses and cars and all these kinds of things. And they think, well, I'm falling behind. And, you know, the reality is, and this is, I think, a very important point is, you know, that, and I love that you wrote about this in the book. It's like, most people are average, you know, like, and that's perfect. It's perfectly okay. It's perfectly okay to engage your work every day, to do work that you love, to, have a sense of wonder about the world, to just find fulfillment and deep engagement in adding value and just producing things that make other people make other people's life a little better and have good relationships. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with that. We don't all have to be 26-year-old tech billionaires. And I don't know why that became the thing that we feel like we have to aspire toward.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I kind of do. It's all a part of the narrative, right?
Well,
I spend so much time talking about storytelling in the book and how we as human beings are storytelling creatures. In fact, we walk around all day long telling ourselves stories to make sense of the world. So our brain's operating system is quite literally narrative. It's how we find meaning in things. It's how we stay alive, to be quite honest. And we do this so often that not only do we walk around all day long telling ourselves stories, even when we go to bed at night, while we physically sleep, our brain stays up all night long telling ourselves more stories. And so you have to be really careful what narrative you buy into, because that narrative is going to drive every facet of your life, your thinking, your worldview, your behavior, the choices that you make, the habits that you form. And so it's very important to be aware of the stories that we tell ourselves and check that narrative, because nothing will be quicker to crush your childlike wonder and all that comes with it faster than the believing the lies and deception that is so often sold to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so Harris, I know this is maybe an unfair question, but what what would you say to someone right now who feels like wonder has been robbed from them, especially during this time where listen, we all still have to do our work. I mean, I've been doing a number of events with companies, virtual events, and people just feel overwhelmed. They feel like so much has been taken from them during this time, from all of us, right? Like none of us have ever lived through a global pandemic before. none of us, I mean, you and I are both launching books in the middle of a global pandemic. Like we've never done that before, right? So it feels like so much is being taken from us. So much is out of our control. And yet we still are accountable to have to produce work. You know, that hasn't gone away. How do we, you know, what would be your sort of summarized advice to those who feel like wonder has been robbed, other than buy and read the book, which is fantastic, but, you know, what would be your advice to them?
Yeah. I mean, people ask me all the time, where do I find wonder? And I would just remind them that you already have it. So to find wonder is less about going and searching for something and more about getting something out of the way so that you could return back to your natural state. Because if we were born into this world awake to wonder and seeing magic everywhere, what has created that blindfold that's covering up your eyes and keeping you from being able to see it? It could be cynicism, complacency, worry. I talk so much in the book about the role of imagination. I think a lot of people believe that imagination is something that is super active when you're young, and then it becomes less active as you grow up. I hear a lot of people say that, oh yeah, we just need to get back to using our imaginations again, or we need to be more imaginative. And every single human being on the planet is using their imagination. It's just a question of how. So you look at all the worry and anxiety that's paralyzing so many in a year like 2020, that worry is simply a misuse of imagination. Your imagination is hard at work, consistently trying to keep you alive, because you're a storytelling being, by filling in a blank. The blank follows the question, what happens next? So if you're driving in a car and you don't feel safe and your nervous system is freaking out, it's because your imagination is at work. It's going ahead into the future and telling yourself a story. It's creating a story like, I think we're going to end up in a ditch because the driver is not driving safely. So again, in that instance, your imagination is doing its job. It's communicating with your nervous system to keep you alive. But oftentimes we spend so much time worrying and being anxious about things that we have so little control over, we don't realize it would take the same amount of creative energy to reallocate that imaginative work towards creating and innovating and pivoting. And so instead of panicking, to shift to pivoting, to pivot, not panic, as my friend John Acuff says. And again, that's that you're already using that energy and imagination. So why not use it in positive ways by creating a more hopeful version of the story? And if you go back to the beginning of our conversation of moving from seeing as believing to believing as seeing, well, if you spend much of your time utilizing your imagination to answer that question, what happens next, with something beautiful and positive, well, eventually your brain creates this blueprint, and it can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. So if you spend your time imagining a beautiful story, your brain is going to go to work to reverse engineer and make that story a reality. The brain is really a powerful thing. And I already knew that going into writing this book, but when I went down the rabbit hole and started doing even more research to write responsibly, that even that awakened my own wonder, and I was in awe of what our brain is truly capable of.
Oh, I love that. And I love the idea that worry takes as much work as wonder, right? Like it actually is work. It's such a great insight. Harris, the book is great. It's called The Wonder Switch, The Difference Between Limiting Your Life and Living Your Dream. If people want to find out more about you, about your work, about the book, where can they go?
Yeah. So three sites. Storygatherings.com is all of our work for storytelling, which is if you're a human being, you're a storyteller, as we've talked about. So storygatherings.com. You can learn about my personal work at harristhethird.com, harrisiii.com, and pick up a copy of the book. Thewonderswitch.com takes you straight to that page. And we have some cool pre-order bonuses going on until October 13th.
Fantastic. Well, Harris, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. And thanks for spreading wonder in the world.
Man, you keep my wonder awake. You're one of those friends that is constantly leaving me in awe and inspiring me to do bigger and better things in beautiful ways. So I appreciate your friendship.
Oh, thanks, man. I feel the same thing. And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.